The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Roto-World Baseball Show. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined, as always, by Scott Pianowski as we wrap up our spring training positional previews with the relief pitchers today. Scott, we made it. We got all the way through.
Yeah, we threw 8 quality innings. Now we just get 3 outs in the 9th inning, which is no problem, right, Eric?
It's always the easiest thing to do.
Let me give you the first rule of thumb with closers. Never watch your closer. Never watch him. Watch it on the ticker. Oh, good. They have a 5-3 lead in the 9th inning. I'll hopefully have a save in 15 minutes. That's how you watch your closers. But saves are part of the game. I think, Eric, if you want to win a fantasy league, a 5x5 roto league, and of course, Yahoo is open for business if you want to get in one of those leagues. I don't believe in punting a category. I don't believe in punting strikeouts or punting stolen bases or whatever. But I guess the category people are most likely to punt is saves, whether they just don't want to pay for it at the draft day, or maybe their bullpen goes kablooey in the early part of the season. Like, you know what? I'm just sick of pulling my hair out. So I guess this is the one category is most likely a punt. I'd rather be good in every category, but my goal is to get a good bullpen on a budget. I'm not going to be in there pitching for the first tier guys.
Yeah, I think, and we can, you know, we can definitely talk about that in terms of, you know, the appropriate strategies. I think, you know, one thing I did want to touch on, just kind of, you know, I guess lessons from last year, if you will. We did see a fair amount of closers get saves. You know, there were 214 different relievers with a save last year. That was actually fewer than the year before. What's interesting is that we had 12 relievers get 30 or more saves. That's the most in the last 5 years. We had 23 relievers get 20 or more saves. That's the most in the last 5 years. So, you know, could it be a little bit of some stability coming together in the back end after years of, you know, us feeling like managers are mixing and matching, you know, closer markets at the end, and how there's kind of, you know, we now have terms like high leverage reliever, and, you know, primary save share reliever, right? Things that, you know, guys like, you know, Greg Jewett, who have covered bullpens, are like trying to differentiate between teams who will use one guy in the 9th and teams who will use their best reliever in the most important situation at the end of games. But it does seem like we've started to get a little bit more of a pool of players to choose from who can at least lock in 20 saves, which is pretty good. We have talked about, you know, 80th percentile, you know, targets in a lot of leagues for 12-team leagues in NFBC format. So that's, you know, 9 pitchers. They don't have to have a set number of relievers, but you're looking at about 74 saves to finish at your 80th percentile. So, you know, if you're getting a couple relievers who are knocking down 20 saves, that puts you in a pretty good spot. And just so we note, Greg Jewett put out an article on trends from last year that I found interesting. And he found that in in 2023, if you look at the NFBC online championship, so this is 12-team leagues, 23 of the top 25 teams last year targeted what he referred to as an anchor reliever in the first 100 picks of a 12-team draft. And that's that is way up from the best teams in 2022 and 2021 were not so reliant on that. But it does seem like, you know, it's a good idea to get your top reliever within the first 100 picks. And I think you and I both kind of agree on that. We're just not necessarily taking one in the top 50, but I assume you're not like fully waiting on relievers, right? You tend to like having one from like that second clump, which we'll get to in our rankings.
Yeah, God, you gave a shout out to Greg Jewett over at The Athletic, who's doing some unbelievable closer and relief work, and certainly somebody who I take seriously as I'm trying to hunt for saves. So first of all, dear listener, as you're formulating your save strategy, a lot of this, and I say a lot of your draft prep has to start at the end, where what can you get late in the draft? What can you get on waivers? If you're in a more casual league and you can assume you're going to rule the waiver wire, you're going to get most of your guys or the majority of your guys, you don't have to prioritize the closers. But we're trying to help the people who are maybe in a more competitive group where you're going to have to get saves at draft day. And you just can't say, oh, I'll just get all the fresh closers because, you know, Bob in accounting isn't paying attention. He isn't logged in 2 weeks. You know, you can win that league by showing up. So we're trying to help you for the leagues that might need a little bit more effort or acuity during the season. So my strategy, as you talked about, that anchor reliever, I'd like to have that anchor reliever too. I just want to pay second tier prices for somebody who could be a first tier reliever. So Camilo Duvall is a guy who, on different relief boards, he might be 5, 6, 7, something like that. I could easily see him being one of the top three relievers when the season ends. Jordan Romano is a pitcher like that. I love to tier two reliever, tier one return, a tier three reliever. Evan Phillips is the main guy with the Dodgers. Last year, I think 10 different pitchers got saved, something like that. But you would think that Phillips would be the primary guy. We know the Dodgers are going to win a lot of games. Some of them won't lead to a save because they'll score a lot of runs. But he's maybe a third-tier closer who could end up being a second-tier return. So that's kind of how I'm playing it. This four or five closers, the same four or five closers at the top of everybody's board, I'm probably not going to be spending the ADP because I just hate that hitter or the pitcher I'm giving up in that round.
Yeah.
But I am going to – I like that anchor strategy. And this is, you know, to compare it to fantasy football, where you get that one running back you can hang your hat on. He doesn't necessarily have to be a first-round pick, but, you know, second-round pick, third-round pick, whatever. And then you go on a budget for the running back two, the running back three, the running back four. That's in a general sense similar to my closer strategy.
Sure. Yeah, I like, you know, like you, I like the anchor closer for me, and we'll talk about this as we get to our rankings. For me, there's a clear gap outside of the top 10, so I like to make sure I have, you know, one of my top 10 guys, and then I just like to make sure I have two of my top 20. You know, so I may wait on my first closer and then get my second closer, you know, maybe not like right back to back, but sooner, and then if I do that and I do that well, I've probably got high 50s, maybe 60 potential saves from those two guys. And if my target is 74, then I don't really need to worry about my third closer or, you know, another closer for a while. I can decide I want to take one late. I can decide I'm just going to get a, you know, non-closer who can help me in ratios. We'll talk about some of those guys later on. Maybe I'll decide I'll take some spec saves guys, or maybe I'll just load up on starting pitching and know if I'm in a league that historically has had closers show up on the waiver wire. Okay, I've got my two guys I feel really good about. I don't really want to waste a draft pick on a guy at the end who I don't really like because I know that historically my league has always had closers on the wire. I'll take some upside bats or starting pitching, and I will pounce on the first, you know, closer that hits the market, knowing I don't need much. I just need 10 saves, 15 saves, whatever it is. So knowing what your league has historically done will help you. And then also knowing, again, your league settings. So my home league is a Yahoo league. We have 5 starting pitchers, 4 relief pitchers as positional setups. So I have to have 4 relievers in my lineup. I could obviously leave that spot blank. I'm not required to start all 4 relievers, but maybe I want to make sure I get, you know, really target some of these like middle relievers that I think are valuable. Maybe they'll chip in 4 saves, 5 saves, but I'll get good ratios. So knowing your league settings to helps you to determine how quickly you need to jump in on the closer market. But both Scott and I kind of think you don't really necessarily need to jump in so aggressively so early. And if you do love one of those top guys, just know that you don't need to get two of them, right? Not necessarily need to get two of those like top guys. You can still load up on some other categories first.
And if you're in a league that trades, and I realize, you know, NFBC, that means you can't trade, but in most Yahoo leagues you can, saves are always going to be peddled. Because what's going to happen is during the season, somebody's going to be 15 saves ahead of everybody else, or they're going to be so dead in saves that the one closer they have, maybe they're 15 saves behind the next closest team. So they decide, you know, it's not worth it for me to have Jordan Romano. It's, you're always going to be auditing the standings in the middle of the season and right up around that trade deadline too. Where can I trade a surplus? Where can I trade a category that isn't going to hurt me if I get rid of it? Or what stat can I add where I, you know, maybe you're the team that's behind five teams in saves, but you're only seven saves out of the top. If you got one closer, right, you could run by everybody. So this, I always find that there's, in my keeper league, people are always looking to keep closers, and that can be a scary game, yeah, because these guys can run hot and cold.
Yes.
My ex-podcast mate, Michael Salfino, said that closers are kind of like French fries. They're great when they're hot, or relief pitchers, I think it was like, were like French fries. They're great when they're hot, and when they go cold, you just want to toss them in the trash. But you know, loosely, that's not exactly how Mike phrased it, but you know, he's got a great way of words, and I agree with him. You know, and we've seen, Eric, baseball's changed so much in the last 10, 15, 20 years, right, where the one-inning reliever, these guys come in, throw as hard as you can for 15 or 20 pitches and then come out. These teams have these huge bottomless cup of bullpens and fire breathing dragons. And so sometimes, you know, a lot of times these guys blow their shoulders out or they blow their elbows out because they're max effort throwing 98. And I don't know if the body's meant to do that for a long period of time. So you know, if we do this show 3 years from now, I'm sure the list of relievers we'll talk about will be like totally different because this is a high attrition position, which is all the more reason why I'm not, one of my first five or six picks is not going to be a closer.
And you're just such a consummate professional because we did want to talk about some injury news at the top. So that's a beautiful segue. There have been some major kind of news updates in the last couple of days with the closer market. So we'll use that to just kind of address some of these names who maybe are will be in our rankings, but you can skip over them a little bit more later. Devin Williams is the big news. Came out yesterday on Sunday that he has a sore back and is headed to get a second opinion from a spine specialist. So the two things there that jump out to me are second opinion means the first opinion he got probably wasn't so good. And then obviously needing to go see a spine specialist when you're dealing with a back injury is never a great sign. Does this just take Devin Williams off your draft board entirely until we have more information?
I'll just admit I'm such a scaredy cat with spring injuries, especially when they're pitcher related. I viewed a top four in some order of Class A, Diaz, Hader, and Williams. We'll get to our rankings in a little bit, but I was going to be out on those guys anyway. This just cements that. I'm just glad, and I don't mean this in any kind of mean-spirited way. I don't want to see anybody get hurt, but it just makes me all the more glad that I don't have any Devin Williams shares right now because I'd be pulling my hair out. As you said, second opinion, spine specialist, you know, Milwaukee. A team probably going to be around 500 in quasi contention this year. Williams had a little bit of a walk problem last year. I'm not going to, one of my early picks is not going to be somebody who I'm already worried about physically. Right. So yeah, essentially Williams, I mean, I'm going to rank him still somewhat lofty, but I would urge people don't talk yourself into picks, make picks that you feel good about, that you can sleep well at night with your early selections. When you're getting in the second half of your draft, that's when you're taking guys you're not sure about, and that's why they're available. And you're just talking about upside at that point. I want floor with those early selections. So I don't want you. I know we have the grid set up with our rankings, and you'll see that I have Williams very high, but I would tell you not to draft him today.
I still have Williams high because I'm not moving him until I know more information. Mm-hmm. However, like you said, I wasn't drafting him at his ADP anyway because this is a Brewers team that already dealt Corbin Burns, is rumored to be dealing Willy Adames. I just don't know how invested they are in being competitive this season. So even if they don't trade Devin Williams, which is a possibility, he just could be on a team that's, you know, as you mentioned, around 500. So I'm not as interested at that cost. Another guy I haven't yet moved on my rankings, and we got good news, is David Bednar, the closer for the Pirates. Yesterday, They mentioned that he had played catch and felt good. He was shut down with a lat tightness. So basically just, you know, his lat in the back of the top of the back of the shoulder was just a little sore. When it happened, the team had said there was nothing to be concerned about. They were just being cautious because it was spring training. He's already started throwing and apparently feels, you know, no tightness now when he's throwing. He played catch, so he still needs to, you know, move on to bullpens and then maybe live batting practice and then back into games, whatever it is. But we have 2 weeks at least until opening day. So I'm not overly worried about that. I think, you know, people get concerned when they hear tightness in spring, but it's very common for pitchers who have maybe not thrown a lot over the winter to not immediately bounce back. They take a little bit of time. It's different when you get to like a Garrett Cole situation where a pitcher comes in, you know, feeling fresh and then all of a sudden starts to feel like they're not recovering. I'd rather a guy like Bednar come in and just feel like he is struggling to loosen up, so they take a little bit more time to let that happen. I know you're a scaredy cat with injuries, but this definitely doesn't seem like a Devin Williams type of situation, at least.
Yeah, I feel like with Bednar, the big question you have to ask yourself is how competitive do you think the Pirates will be? And does that make them sellers at the trade deadline? Last year, they got off to a great start. They ended up under 500, although 76 wins was a 14-win improvement. I think they'd like to tell themselves a story that they could be about a 500 team this year, maybe be like last year where they were contenders for a little bit. They have Aroldis Chapman there percolating if they trade Bednar. You see, the thing with closing is that a closer is a luxury unneeded for a losing team. So if Pittsburgh is not a winning team this year, and I know, you know they've extended some guys, they have some young talent, I think you could squint and see that maybe the Pirates could challenge for this division in a couple of years. I don't think it's going to be this year, even though the NL Central looks very gettable, but I don't think it's, I think it's a little bit out of Pittsburgh's range. But when you say scaredy cat with injuries, which I am, I'm not denying that, but I'm also with Bednar, you have to price in what's his role. And because if he gets traded in July or August, it may be to a team that doesn't view him as a closer, that views him as a seventh inning, eighth inning guy, or maybe a fireman reliever. He doesn't automatically get the save. So he's been somebody I've generally been avoiding, even though I like the pitcher. He's been really good closer the last couple of years and a really good fantasy value. But I think this year he's priced appropriately. And with that lat injury, I've easily skipped over his name.
Yeah, I hear all of your concerns. I do think he's been so good for the last few years that he will most likely close if he were to be traded. I feel the same way about Kenley Jansen, who's the closer for the Red Sox, who also had general lat soreness and was shut down. He's throwing live batting practice tomorrow, which is Tuesday. So that he's kind of a step ahead of Bednar and that he's progressed from playing catch to facing live hitters. And then we'll probably throw in games. He's been on the trade, you know, block essentially, or trade rumors have circulated around him all offseason. He's not under contract next year. I think it's almost a given that the Red Sox trade him since he's probably not going to be re-signed. But I would assume Kenley Jansen, given his track record and his history, will close no matter where he goes. So I'm not really dinging him too much either for this lat soreness or for the potential trade because, you know, you and I both like the Red Sox, but we feel like they'll be a fine, maybe good, but not great team. So he's probably not going to get traded to a worse team context. If anything, the team context might be better when he gets traded. So I don't view his potential, you know, movement as a reason to be down on Kenley Jansen. I'm curious if you're down on him either for this lat soreness or potential trade.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about Jansen is last year, he's in his mid-30s. He actually ticked up his fastball back into the 95 range, and his swing strike rate went up a little bit. It's not where it was in his heyday, but at least he, you know, he was throwing the gas a little bit better. The strikeout rate did go down. The walk rate did go up. Bottom line is, I don't, with relief pitchers, maybe it's not as big of a deal, but I'm trying, Eric, to draft younger fantasy football teams. I'm trying to draft younger fantasy baseball teams. And cliff seasons are going to happen at some point in the mid to late 30s. I'd rather just have a younger guy in this chair than Jansen. There's a lot of guys in his tier who are similar, where they're on the back nines of their careers. I'd try to draft away from those guys, but at some point you might just say, well, here's 30 saves. You might, here, come and get it. He's one of those players that if the room kind of backs away from him and I get my price on Jansen, I'm happy to take him. but I'm not going to view him as a proactive pick.
Yeah. And that's similar to another trendy reliever coming into the offseason was Robert Stevenson, who kind of like really emerged as a dynamite reliever for the Rays last year, because that's what the Rays do. They take guys with plus raw stuff who haven't figured out an approach, and they turn them into dominant relievers. Stevenson then signed with the Angels in the offseason. He's 30 years old, so he is, you know, he's not old, but he's not a young prospect. Many people thought he would be the closer for the Angels. He was shut down early in the spring with shoulder soreness. He has already thrown bullpen sessions, and the Angels manager, Ron Washington, has said he'll have plenty of time to get the innings he needs before opening day. So Stevenson should be on the opening day roster, but he likely will not have won the closer job by then, if he even does. So he's in a split with Carlos Estevez. Neither one of us ranked him inside of our top 20. So I just want to get your thoughts on Robert Stevenson at this point. Are you interested? Because obviously the injury has pushed his ADP down, you know, outside of the top 200 now. So he's a little bit more affordable than where he was going before. Or does the injury in the team context of the Angels make you just not interested?
Oh, I'm certainly interested. They gave him the 3-year, $33 million. So it's a case of follow the money. And Estevez was so bad in the second half. He had a really good first half, or at least a quality first half. And then he was awful in the second half, which is why the Angels spent the big money on Stevenson in the first place. Although, again, even though they did sign him for 3 years and $33 million, if the Angels are as bad as I think they are, that's the first stuff you start trading is relief pitching. I don't know what team would maybe want to take on that much contract. Maybe you split it up. But if he wasn't healthy, if Stevenson wasn't hurt, he'd be one of my, even though I think Estevez would start this season as the closer, I would say that Stevenson would be one of my best targets of non-closing relievers to draft late in the round, especially in a keeper league. We're trying to get that keeper closer. I think there's a decent chance by the middle of the season he's pitching in the ninth inning for the Angels. It's not going to be opening day. He may not even be active on opening day, but I just have no faith in Estevez long-term.
I agree with you, and I think we know that bad teams sometimes put up decent closer totals. Mm-hmm. Speaking of bad teams, we can go through very quickly on this, but John Brebbia, who was penciled in as the potential closer for the White Sox, is throwing again. He had a calf injury and had been shut down, so there was some speculation on who might close for the White Sox. Brebbia should still be ready for opening day, the team believes. Not a great team context, but again, you know, potentially a closer if you're in deeper formats. And then interestingly, yesterday, Johan Duran, who's had a pretty rough spring, you try not to put too much stock in spring training stats, but he was actually down 3 miles an hour across the board on his fastball, his splitter yesterday. The Twins haven't said anything about it, but it is interesting to note. And I want to lead, before we get to our rankings, to that last question to you of, like, when it comes to closers, do you care about spring training results? Do you care about things like his velocity dropped 3 miles an hour in a spring training appearance, or does none of that really matter as long as they're on the field and pitching?
I mean, as long as somebody's got a secure job and they have somewhat of a track record, the veterans, I just don't really worry about it. As long as you don't hear any twinge of an injury. I guess there's a point where enough of a velocity drop would make me nervous. But as you talked about, these guys do, their throwing is so light during the offseason. And a lot of times it's just a case of you get to break the adhesions and just get ready for the regular season. And some pitchers will say, well, don't throw certain pitches until late in spring training. Some guys will just let it in there, let them hit it. I'm just getting my work in. This is all different ways for pitchers to get ready for the season. And a lot of guys are just going to get bombed in the spring training. And you have to accept it. It's just, I don't want to see a lot of walks. A lot of walks will always make me a little bit nervous. If they're getting hit, sure, maybe with a sprinkling of strikeouts mixed in, I can live with that. And again, I can live with a little bit of velocity. Velocity is going to be down league wide. That's, you just, it amps up as the season goes through. But yeah, I guess there's a point. There's a mile per hour threshold maybe where I would be concerned about that. It's one of those I know it when I see it types of things. I haven't moved Duran lower on my board, although he's kind of straddling that tier one, tier two. I haven't drafted him yet, but I don't think what I've heard so far would make me want to radically change his ranking on my board right now.
Agreed. And sometimes we know pitchers are working on things in the spring. They're trying to get another pitch working. So I try not to read too much into the results. We are going to get into our rankings right now. But before we do that, spring training is here. So for those looking to get ahead on the upcoming MLB season, grab your Roto-World Baseball Draft Guide. It's loaded with comprehensive positional rankings, projections, and player profiles to ensure your draft is a success. Visit nbcsports.com/draftguide and use code baseball24 to get 10% off at checkout. That's nbcsports.com/draftguide and use code baseball24 to get 10% off at checkout.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
So Scott, let's get into our rankings. We actually have the exact same top 20. The positions are, you know, moved around, but we have the same 20 names. So who are your guys ranked 20 through 11 to start it off?
Yep. Tanner Scott, number 20. It hasn't been a great spring for him, so I got a little bit of cold feet drafting him, but he still stayed on my board. Adbert Alzolay looks like the closer for a Cubs team that I think is going to win that division. I'd like to draft him where I can. Craig Kimbrell is in Baltimore now, getting on that back nine of his career, but if the Orioles look like a playoff team, maybe even a World Series contender. We talked a lot about Kenley Jansen, my number 17 reliever. Clay Holmes looks solidified on a Yankee team, probably headed for 90-plus wins. He'd be a decent pick this year. Does David Bednar stay in Pittsburgh? I have him as my 15 reliever at the moment. Ryan Helsley got the job last year, at least half the season. I think he had 14 saves. He's my number 14 reliever. Alexis Diaz started hot. Don't like the way he ended that season. The Reds do have an interesting roster. I'm not really sure what to do with him. He's 13 for me right now. Evan Phillips has been lights out for two straight years. Didn't do so hot before then, which kind of fits the motif of relievers that kind of run hot and cold. Mm-hmm. Going to be the main guy for Dave Roberts in LA and a team that's headed for 100 wins. That means he's going to be a guy I want to roster here and there. He's my number 12. And then Pete Fairbanks, I don't know how many innings he'll throw, but man, he's been a wipeout reliever and closer for the Rays, and he just misses my top 10. I have him at RP 11.
Yeah. So my RP 20 is Adbert Alzolay for the Cubs. Really kind of emerged as was a starting pitcher without enough pitches and really emerged as a reliever for the Cubs. My number 19 is Kenley Jansen. My number 18 is Tanner Scott, who you mentioned. My number 17 is Clay Holmes. Interesting to see. There's a lot of Yankee news today that was potentially concerning injury related. Garrett Cole, Aaron Judge. We need to see how those things shake out, but that could, you know, impact the type of team that the Yankees are and how many wins and saves a guy like Clay Holmes gets. But I expect him to remain inside of my top 20. I need to, like, counting in reverse is tough for me. So what number was I at? 29 to 87. So 16 is Craig Kimbrell. 15, I have Paul Sewald. 14, Ryan Helsley. 13, Alexis Diaz. 12, Evan Phillips. And 11, Pete Fairbanks. Let's talk about Tanner Scott for a second. We talked about not wanting to read too much into spring training results. The reason I'm concerned about Tanner Scott, and I bumped him down from about 14th, I think, to 18th, and I could see moving him out of my top 20 soon. The reason I'm concerned is twofold. One, Tanner Scott had a huge breakout last year with a 2.31 ERA and 12 saves because he took over the job late in the year for the Marlins. And part of that was because of a massive improvement in walk rate. His walk rate the 2 years had been 15% and 16% in each of the last two seasons. His walk rate last year was under 8%. His walk rate in the spring is 37%. And now we're talking about only, you know, two innings. Granted, that's two innings over four appearances, so that's also a problem, right? But in four appearances, it's not a lot, but having problems with your command, right? Walking seven guys in four appearances suggests that maybe the control or the command gains from last year don't stick. If they don't stick, his two previous seasons, he was a 5.17 ERA pitcher and a 4.31 ERA pitcher. If he regresses like that, he's not a lock to remain their closer. And if Miami falls out of contention, Tanner Scott is 100% the type of pitcher who gets traded and doesn't close somewhere else. He just becomes a lefty out of the bullpen for another team. So I have those concerns a little bit where, like, he's now on the border for me, and I could see moving him below Jansen and Alzolay real quickly, and then I could maybe see him out of the top 20.
Yeah, I moved him down to 20 because some of those legacy closers, like the Jansens, like the Kimbrels, they're going to get so much leash. And I don't feel like a guy like Tanner Scott, whose resume for closing is a part season, he had those horrible control problems that you mentioned. And what he's done in the spring training, he's faced 19 batters. He's allowed seven hits. He's walked seven guys. 14 of the 19 batters he's faced have reached base. And I feel like when relief pitchers go bad, if they get batted ball, if they get BABIP to death, you know, a single here, a double there, I think teams can live with it. When you walk the ballpark or you allow home runs, it leaves a mark. It leaves a scar. Mm-hmm. And I could see Tanner Scott walking his way out of this job, just, you know, losing the strike zone. Walking guys on four or five pitches, it's driving the Marlins crazy, and they feel like they have to do something. And I mean, look at who he was the previous year, 6.6 walks per nine, 6.2 walks per nine. His career, 5 walks per 9 innings. So I'm not convinced just because last year he has control in a good place that it's a permanent change. And I ranked him low enough that I want to basically steer people away from drafting him. That's how I'm going to approach it.
Yeah, I am coming around to that idea as well. There was some concern about Adbert Alzolay when the Cubs signed Hector Neris, because Hector Neris does have, you know, some experience as a closer before. I feel like Alzolay was really good last year. I'm not overly concerned about Hector Neris. We both have Alzolay, you know, ranked inside of our top 20. So I assume you're also not concerned about Hector Neris or overly concerned.
I would still draft Alzolay proactively. I guess that's the way I would say it. I can't rank him above some of these guys who definitely have the job. Again, I'll mention Jansen and Kimbrel. They're just, a lot would have to happen. A lot would have to move before they'd lose it. I feel like Alzolay has the job secured. It's his job to lose. He could lose it. It might be easier for him to lose it than some of these guys who already have resumes of the capital C closers. But again, I'm in on the Cubs. Alzolay was so good last year. I feel like there's a good chance he's in the 25 or 30 save pocket. And they have depth behind him, which any good team's going to have. And Neris was a reasonable guy to add. Merriweather's in that bullpen, who I think is an interesting pitcher. If you're looking for non-closing relievers, he's somebody's on my radar. But at the end of the season, I really think that Alzolay will be at the head of that committee where he's going to start it. And again, I'm looking at maybe 25 to 30 saves. I think he's a pretty safe place, given his ADP, to park your money.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Kimbrel. I think, you know, Kimbrel is no longer like top tier closer like he was, you know, when he was in Boston, where, you know, he had an ERA like around 2, right? This isn't that guy, but he's still a very solid closer. I think that people sometimes are still hung up on that. It was really just 35 innings at the end of 2019 and then the poor COVID 2020 season where he was really bad. But he bounced back in 2021 with a 2.26 ERA and then was fine with the Dodgers last year. 3.75 ERA, the strikeout rate, 2 years ago with the Dodgers, the strikeout rate dipped a little bit, but he was fine. And then he was also good for the Phillies last year. And, you know, they moved him into the closer role midway through the year, but he had a 3.26 ERA for them. His strikeout rate went back up to almost 34%. So I think that we are still somehow docking Craig Kimbrel, maybe because you know, he's 36 years old, maybe because he used to be elite. So now that he's not elite, we think he's no longer good. But this is still a solid reliever on potentially the best team in the American League. And so I'm super happy to get him as my second closer. And because he's going near the back of the top 20 in most formats right now, you can actually get Kimbrel as your second closer without really having to be overly aggressive.
Yeah, it's the boring value pick, right? The Ibanez All-Star pick. And I also wonder if people are holding it against Kimbrel that he's just bounced around so much, right? I mean, he started with the Braves, the Padres, Red Sox, Cubs, Dodgers, Phillies. Now he's on the Orioles. So he's going to be a perfect immaculate grid pick when his career's over. I mean, right now he already covers like, you know, a quarter of the league, it feels like. And because there was that one year where the Red Sox didn't trust him in the playoffs, and then he had that one year where the Cubs, he couldn't get anybody out. So I think it's just natural to think, okay, this guy's career's over. His control was out of control, but he's fixed that. Last year it was really, really good. The strikeout rate bounced back up. And also, it's just a case of, Eric, follow the money, right? Or follow the team's intentions. Mm-hmm. Baltimore, it's no more of this, we're building something. They've built it. They're a playoff team now. They're a World Series contending team now. And they're saying, Craig Kimbrel, go in the bullpen and we'll call you in the ninth inning. He's not pitching the seventh inning. He's going to be a capital C closer. Good. I think he has a good chance to lead the American League in saves. The price is a little bit less because he's older and because maybe there's a little bit more injury risk. And, you know, you think you want guys on the escalator and all that. But if I get an unquestioned ninth inning guy on one of the four or five best teams in baseball, I mean, we all think, okay, the Dodgers and the Braves are better than everybody else.
Yeah.
Probably true. But who's in that next wave? I think Baltimore's as good as any other roster in baseball. So
I would agree.
Getting their ninth inning guy looks pretty good to me. And the ADP is you can't beat it right now. I think he's a tremendous value as your second closer.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I think the last guy we'll talk about in this section, people may be surprised to see Alexis Diaz in this tier of 10 for both of us because, you know, he did save 37 games for the Reds last year. He finished inside the top 10 in almost all formats in terms of just relief pitcher value, you know, with a 3.07 ERA. I have no issues with Alexis Diaz, right? So my ranking him here isn't to say, oh, Alexis Diaz is bad, he's the 13th ranked closer. It's to say, in my opinion, 37 saves is not going to be repeatable. I think he's going to be closer to 30. I don't think the 3.07 ERA is repeatable. Most of the metrics will tell you it's not, whether you're a Sierra person or an XFIP person or, you know, just looking at barrel rates and hard contact rates, whatever. He's more likely to be a 3.5 ERA or over pitcher, especially given his home park. And also his 30% strikeout rate is really good for pitchers in general. It's solid for closers. He obviously is like, he has swing and miss stuff, but he's not, you know, putting up these ridiculous, you know, type of strikeout rates that we sometimes see from some of like the really, really top tier guys. I mean, like, you know, even Duran is like over 33% usually, right? That is a big enough gap. I'm curious if that's kind of where you're at on Diaz, where, you know, not off of him, but last year was probably better than you're going to get.
For me, he's a simple ADP fade. I'm looking at the Yahoo ADP board right now, and he's 50 picks ahead of Kimbrel. He's 65 picks ahead of Kenley Jansen. He is 25 or 30 picks ahead of Pete Fairbanks, who I have ranked higher anyway. So the market likes Alexis Diaz more than I do. I don't think they're baking in what he did in the second half appropriately. I don't think he's anywhere near as sure of a thing as the drafters so far have reacted to it. So, you know, the ADP, he's a 89.7 right now, Yahoo, the last 7 days, 91.7 if you take the entire spring. I don't view him as a top 100 pick at all. I will not be drafting Alexis Diaz this year.
There you go. Let's get into the top 10. That's what the people are here for. So who are your top 10 closers for the 2024 season?
Yeah, Andrés Muñoz, number 10, left over in Seattle, has the job to himself. Paul Sewald, of course, was his former running mate, did a great job for Arizona, got to the World Series last year. Raisel Iglesias, Another guy, you know, you draft him, you can't really watch him, but anybody who's got the ninth inning in Atlanta looks pretty good to me. Jordan Romano is one of my target guys. He's my seven, and Camilo Duval is my RP6. I think they have great chances to be in that first tier when the season is over. So I'm going to have those, Duval and Romano, on a lot of teams, and they're back-to-back on my board. Yoan Duran, we talked about earlier with that velocity dip right now, my RP5. And then the top four, you can really put them in any order you want. I'm just not drafting them. And I know this feels like an episode where I'm saying, don't draft this guy, don't draft that guy. I want you to get a couple of them. You just have to, you have to have an emotional, you know, relationship with your closer. And I just, this is a lot of guys who make me nervous, but I still feel like I'm giving you at least six or seven targets here. I'm just not going to target the top four. My top four right now are Josh Hader at four, Edwin Diaz off that injury. At least it wasn't arm related. He's number three. Devin Williams at number two with an asterisk. As you said, spine specialist, second opinion, makes me nervous. And Emmanuel Clase, a different kind of reliever, right? Because these guys, for the most part, they strike the world out. Clase doesn't really strike out anybody comparatively, but he doesn't walk anybody either, and he gets the ground balls. New manager in Cleveland, but you would think the ninth inning is all his. Number one on my board, probably won't be on any of my rosters.
Yeah, it is interesting how that works. I kind of feel similar to you. I'm okay taking some of these guys I have in the top tier who we'll get to. I'm not actively seeking it out. Back half of my, the top 10 for me, I have Jordan Romano at 10. I have Andres Munoz at 9. I have David Bednar at 8. As we mentioned, I'm just not as concerned right now about the lat as you are. I have Camilo Duval at 7. I have Josh Hader at 6. I have Raisel Iglesias at 5. I have Devin Williams at 4, and this was before the spine specialist, so, you know, question mark for me there. I have Emmanuel Clase at 2. I still have Emmanuel Clase at 3. I still have Yohan Duran at 2. We'll see what to make of the you know, velocity being down. And I have Edwin Diaz at 1. I had him at 1 last year before the injury. I'm happy to buy back in on him at 1. It doesn't really matter to me that the Mets aren't as loaded as they were before. I think they're a good enough team to get wins. And I think he's going to lock down the saves there. So a couple of guys before we get into that real top. Andres Munoz is in the top 10 for both of us now. That may be a surprise to some people, but I feel like he has always been a top 10 closer in terms of ability, right? We know his raw stuff is electric. And he is now the primary saves guy in Seattle. They do like to mix and match. Matt Brash is dealing with an arm injury. They claim he's going to be, you know, healthy at the start of the year. He's a little bit less of a sure thing. I feel like the Mariners, they're not just going to give Munoz the entire, like, every save, but I think he's going to get the vast majority of them, maybe more than we've come to expect from Seattle in the past. I really like drafting Munoz. I think he's incredibly talented.
I do too. Just the whip did bounce up last year, a little bit hit unlucky, but even though the ERA was still in a tidy region, that 1.27 makes you a little bit nervous. But Seattle, it's funny, Eric, because I keep drafting their starting pitchers. You know, they have a great staff, and they play in a pitcher favoring ballpark. So you just think of this is like the home of the 4-2 baseball game. And what happens when your team wins a game at home 4-2? You get a save out of it because nobody goes nine innings anymore. So I feel like this team is going to produce like 55 saves. Obviously one guy's not going to get all of them, but I don't see why Munoz can't get 30 plus. He's certainly a proactive pick for me.
I fully agree there. You're higher than me on Paul Sewald. I like him. So I had him 15th. To me, it's a little bit more about, I think there is some actual competition in the Diamondbacks bullpen. You know, Kevin Ginkel made some real nice adjustments last year and was a really strong reliever. Paul Sewald was really good for the Diamondbacks down the stretch. And has been, you know, really solid, you know, as that primary saves guy in Seattle as well. I don't see the 34 saves he got last year being duplicated. I think, you know, again, he's not a huge strikeout guy. There was some improvement last year, but I guess I'm not buying in majorly on the strikeouts. So I'm totally happy with him as my RP2. I guess I'm curious if you entered the season with Sewald as your number, as your top closer on your team. You're comfortable with that?
Yeah, this is where I'm going to pitch you Duvall and Romano as guys I'm going to draft as much as I can, because I want Seawald on my roster as my second reliever. And if I don't get him, I don't get him. Interesting playoffs for him, right? He had two saves in all three of the playoff rounds that led to the World Series. And then Texas hit him like they knew what pitch was coming. I mean, Texas just knocked the guy all over the park, which is going to happen sometimes. But he didn't have the greatest control when he went to the Diamondbacks. And I don't think he's their closer. You know, he's the head of the committee. I don't think they're in any way married to that. And it's kind of an interesting team because they were ahead of schedule last year. I mean, they were happy to make the playoffs with 83 wins. And then 3 weeks went the right way and they were in the World Series. Nobody saw that coming. But he's somebody who I think he's going to get 20 to 25 saves. But if you told me that he pitched horrible in April and he lost his job, that wouldn't surprise me either. So you kind of have to season him to market. Again, I think even though he's only a couple slots behind Duvall and Romano, those guys have done it for a couple of years now. They're on, I think, better teams. I don't know, Arizona, view them as the 83 win Diamondbacks, not the went to the World Series Diamondbacks. I feel a little bit better about those other two guys. So Seawald is season it to taste. If the rim gives me a deal on him, fine. If I don't get Paul Seawald, I'm fine with that too.
I find it he's so interesting because he actually was a better pitcher with Seattle, but he got way more saves in fewer games with the Diamondbacks. He saved 21 games in 45 appearances for the Mariners. He saved 13 games in just 20 appearances for the Diamondbacks, despite having a much higher ERA and striking out far fewer batters in Arizona. So I'm just curious how that all levels out next year. We have a little bit of a disagreement, not huge, on Josh Hader, but people may be surprised for me to have Hader down at 6 when he went to the Astros. And for me, my concern is that he has again already stated that he prefers to only throw one inning at a time. The Astros have really good relievers throughout the bullpen, including Ryan Pressly, who has been their closer for a few years, who is a right-handed pitcher. So my concern is that if Hader's only going to throw one inning and the Astros are facing the Dodgers and Shohei Ohtani and Freeman are coming up in the eighth inning, why would they not throw Hader in the eighth inning, right? And then all of a sudden they know they have Pressly to close out the game in the ninth. So I don't think the Astros are going to have a bullpen by committee. I'm not saying that. But I do think that Pressly will steal some saves enough so that I'm moving Hader below guys who I feel like are the clear one and only guy in their team's bullpen.
Yeah, that's a fascinating argument, which makes me wonder if you can tell yourself a story that Pressly gets double-digit saves, maybe he's a great late-round pick. A lot of people are leaving him for dead in fantasy drafts. Like, it's obviously Hader. Hader's the guy. Right. You make a great point. If Freeman and Ohtani are coming up and fill in whatever left-handed hitters you want, and teams, when it comes to platoon advantage, teams are much more sensitive to lefty-lefty than righty-righty. If you're a right-handed batter, if you can't hit right-handed pitching, you can't play. But there are plenty of left-handed hitters who are very sensitive to left-handed pitching. And granted, Ohtani and Freeman are going to be tough for anybody to get out. And also with Hader, I talked about earlier, don't watch your closers. He's one of those guys. He's going to have – last year's walk rate was 4.8 per nine. He's going to have months where he can't find the plate, where he's going to walk guys on four pitches. It's going to drive you crazy. What's wrong with Josh Hader? Maybe they'll take him out of the closer role for a week. Maybe they'll give him like a phantom IL spot to get right, or let him pitch in a simulated game or whatever. He's a bigger kid. There's a lot of moving parts to his motion and everything. And I'm not pretending to be a pitching coach. I just know that Josh Hader can be a tough guy to watch. Now, when he's on, he can strike out the side in 11 pitches. I get it.
Sure.
Houston, of course, is one of the better teams in the league. But you make a great case that maybe Josh Hader is a 25 to 30 save guy, not a 40 save guy, because being left-handed, he's going to do some of that fireman work and it's going to cost him saves here and there.
Yeah, I've loved getting Pressly in like draft and hold formats where, you can't make moves during the year just because I do think he's going to be involved in that bullpen. And you and I will talk about some of our favorite non-closers, and we both have another Astros pitcher on our list. So we will get to that. I am a little higher than you on Raisel Iglesias. I have him 5. You have him 8. I am a believer in, again, a good pitcher on potentially one of the best teams in baseball. was solid last year with a 2.75 ERA, 33 saves. Is not a huge strikeout guy, but is a good strikeout guy, just under 30%. Curious why you're down on Iglesias.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I've lived through some of the rough patches with him. With Iglesias, he's around the plate. He doesn't walk guys, but his strikeout rate is not anywhere close to what the elite guy. It's weird because he always has a swinging strike rate that makes you think he should be dominant with strikeouts, but he hasn't been dominant with strikeouts relative to other relievers. So you have to live with some of the BABIP. And last year, his BABIP crept up to 312, and his whip, that's probably why his whip was, I think, the highest of his career. But also, he's had a little bit of trouble staying healthy, right? He hasn't seen more than 70 innings, I think, since 2018. Mm-hmm. So I don't see – it's hard to say, well, this guy can't be healthy enough to pitch 75 innings. I mean, we're not asking these guys. Right. In the old days, relievers would commonly throw 100-plus innings if they were really good. You know, we saw some guys win the Cy Young Award where they threw 130, 150. Mike Marshall threw over 200 innings 1 year. That is a long-ago era, but – because he hasn't been as durable and because he's more of a pitch to contact guy, maybe he just doesn't fit, you know, and pitch to contact guy where he's not getting ground balls. If he was a pitch to contact guy with a 50% ground ball rate, I'd maybe sleep well at night, but he's a pitch to fly ball rate. And that makes me just a little bit nervous. Last year, the home run rate crept up to 12.3%, which is right around his career norm. So I still have him ranked, I think, in a pretty good spot. It's just a matter of maybe the market likes him a little bit more than I do, and maybe that's just that Braves bias kicking in. Remember, Atlanta's a great team. They're also going to win a lot of 9-2 games where nobody's going to get a save. But I couldn't project him for more than 65 innings. I guess that's probably the bottom line why I have him a little bit lower than you do.
Yeah, and that makes total sense. And then you and I, you know, we talked about these kind of top four arms. They're guys that we like. They're just guys that maybe we're not out and out targeting. If they were to fall in a draft, you know, we have no problem scooping them up. They're guys who have pretty strong save shares. I consider Duran in that grouping, you know, assuming he's healthy coming out of spring. The Twins, you know, most importantly for him, because we know, again, his raw stuff is electric. The Twins showed that they're willing to use him as their primary closer last year. We had assumed, we didn't know if he was going to be a primary closer or one of those like high, you know, multi-inning guys or high leverage guys. For me, him being the closer on Minnesota makes me feel comfortable drafting him. I know you mentioned he's on the fringe for you, but again, these are all guys that we feel comfortable with depending on where they were to fall in a draft. If they came, you know, to a point where we're comfortable getting a reliever or became a value, we're fine grabbing them. We're also fine waiting to some of the guys we have, you know, just outside of our top five who we can scoop.
Let me say this one more thing. I want to make one thing really clear because I've spent a lot of time talking these guys down as a group. And a lot of people are probably thinking, well, hey, Pianowski, who's going to be on your bullpen? Are you going to get some save? Are you punting saves? Because it doesn't sound like you like anybody. I want to make it clear the guys I'm going after. I do think I've made it clear that Duvall and Romano are my tier two guys, I think, can be tier one closers. If you're looking for closers outside the top 10, I like Phillips a lot at his current ADP. I like Alzolay a lot at his current ADP. And I think Jansen and Kimbrel as the boring vet guys are going to return their ADP as well. So I just want to make it clear because I've given you a lot of guys. Oh, I'm not drafting him. I'm a little bit lower on him. I'll avoid him. He's dinged up, whatever. Those are some of the guys who are probably – and I'll – later this spring, I'll do what's in my wallet where I actually tell you who I've drafted, but I know people are in drafts right now. Can you give the people maybe the two or three guys who are the most common relievers on your bullpens right now?
Yeah. So I have been taking a lot of Duran because he is the most likely of the top group to fall to a point where I'm thinking, okay, I didn't want one of my top four or five closers. But the fact that he's here is like, sometimes like RP5 or RP6 in the board, like I've gone and scooped him.
Yahoo ADP of 70.6 right now. So he's like 25 right. picks cheaper than Williams.
Exactly. And that's, I really liked. Munoz for me has been a big target. He's usually going, you know, in the back half of the top 10. I really like him. I think his upside could push him to be in the top 10. I don't know that he gets enough saves to get there. Sorry, top five. I don't know that he gets enough saves to be there, but I just think that he's a reliable target. So I have been getting a fair bit of Andrés Muñoz in early drafts. And then Also, Camilo Doval. I enjoy Camilo Doval. I think that's a solid team, and he's another guy who tends to slip in drafts. So I've gone with him as well as my, you know, these are my like started off RP1 types.
Plus, if you are going to get Doval, that means you get, and you are going to watch him, which I'm not saying you have to do. At least you get the great ballpark and the great Giants, the great Giants broadcast team.
But that's the beauty of it, Scott, is I am an East Coast dad with a toddler, and so I don't even have to worry about staying up to watch my West Coast closer, because by the time he's in the game, I've been asleep for hours. So
East Coast, I thought East Coast dads never get any sleep. With a toddler, man, how are you sleeping at all?
Well, I put a lot of sports on the back burner sometimes at night. I don't watch as much West Coast baseball as I used to. Beauty of MLB TV is you get to watch it all the next day and check out the pitchers and all that kind of stuff.
I wish, you know, living in Michigan, I wish we would go Central Time, man. I don't know why we can't. Michigan can't be on Central Time. I could watch more baseball that way.
Yeah, that would be nice. Central Time seems like a nice middle ground. Scott and I also value the non-closer, the middle reliever. So we're going to tell you who some of our favorite non-closers are that we think you can draft depending on your format. But before we do that, this week, the best on the PGA Tour take on TPC Sawgrass for the 50th time for the Players Championship. Don't miss the best golfers in the world Thursday through Sunday on NBC, Golf Channel, and All Rounds streaming on Peacock. Comcast Business is a proud partner of the Players Championship in addition to Optum and Morgan Stanley. So make sure you check that out this Thursday through Sunday.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could. Would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I know you got a little Players Championship connection, don't you?
For sure. I'm a big golf guy. I do some golf content for Yahoo Sports, and the Players Championship is the fifth major, and it is the strongest field of the year. So that's reason enough to watch it. The Pete Dye course is fantastic. And a friend of mine, my friend Steve Dennis, used to work at the PGA Tour, and he got us on Sawgrass. We played a million years ago. I shot something well into the 90s, well over what I would usually shoot. It's no surprise I have not been added as a sponsor's exemption or anything for this week, but it's the best field of the year. You get Scottie Scheffler coming off a win last week at the Arnold Palmer. You get that great NBC coverage. You're going to love, you know, Dan Hicks and Mike Tirico and Brad Facts, and that team is fantastic. So you're going to fire up Peacock this week and fire up NBC to watch the Players Championship. It's one of the best golf weeks of the year.
I just don't have the bandwidth for golf. It's not my sport right now, but maybe I'll grow into it.
Do you play
it? But let's tell the people about, I also, you know, I played baseball growing up, so I didn't, you know, and for a while, so I just didn't, you know, I said I didn't want to ruin my baseball swing, but my golf swing was just terrible and I don't have patience and I got frustrated. And so I stopped.
Yeah, it can be a frustrating game, but it can be, you know, the great thing about golf is you can go out and play poorly and then you hit that one magical shot and the ball takes off like a bird. You're like, oh, I got it. I figured it out. So anyway, watch, you know what, even if you don't like to play it, you're going to love the Players Championship. So that's a 4-day, and what a great week. You get your college basketball tournaments, the selection shows coming, spring training's heating up, Tout Wars is this weekend. This is one of my favorite weeks of the year, and the Players Championship certainly is part of that mix.
Yeah, you know what, maybe I'll check some out this week. Why don't we end by telling the people some of not only just we'll go over who our top five non-relievers are, and then I want you to tell the people why you believe that it's such a valuable position. So who are the top five non-closers that you're targeting?
Yeah, five guys I'm targeting in no particular order. I like Jason Foley in Detroit. I think the Tigers can steal this division, and I don't trust Alec Lang, who's going to start the regular season as their closer. He was really bad in the second half of the year. I think Foley, a local kid, could steal that job, and even if he doesn't, he'll get quality high-leverage innings for a team I think will be over 500. Any Cubs reliever is interesting to me at the back of that bullpen. I talked about liking Azale. Neris is there. Julian Merriweather, I think, would be a great guy to get if you're in a league that uses holds or you're looking just for the wipeout high, you know, ratio smoothing reliever. I think Merriweather will be somebody to get. We know he has swing and miss stuff. We talked about Robert Stevenson, $33 million, 3 years. I think he's eventually the closer in Anaheim, but even if he's not, I think he'll give them quality innings. He rediscovered his career last year in Tampa Bay. Any Houston reliever, Ryan Pressly for sure. How about Brian Abreu, who's been one of their best late inning guys? Maybe he won't be a save guy, but he might get 7 or 8 wins, maybe a handful of saves, and on a team that's going to win 90, 95 baseball games. Aroldis Chapman got his mojo back last year. Even if Bednar's fine, Chapman's probably going to fall into some saves because he's left-handed. And if Bednar gets hurt again, if Bednar's traded, maybe you have a closer on your hands. So there's some of the guys I'm trying to tick off in the late rounds.
Yeah. So for me, non-closers, they come in two bunches. I like guys who are going to be multi-inning relievers, and I like guys who may be closers eventually. Mason Miller winds up ticking both of those boxes. So Mason Miller, the former, you know, starting pitching prospect who's moved to the bullpen, the A's said that he could work himself into the closers conversation, but he's going to start throwing multiple innings. So this is a guy who could throw 2 to 3 innings at a time, rack up tons of strikeouts, and then eventually also take on the closer's job. Maybe he saves double-digit games by the end of the season while also giving you some sneaky wins and strikeouts in multiple innings. I love that because I love his raw stuff. Jason Adam has been great for Tampa Bay. He's kind of the next up behind Pete Fairbanks. Fairbanks has some injury concerns in the past, but also we know Tampa does play matchups, and even though they're not a committee bullpen per se, I think Adam will steal some saves just regularly while also being a really good reliever. We talked about Brian Abreu, multiple innings for the Astros, and just kind of like a great ratio pitcher. Jeff Hoffman was great last year for the Phillies. Jose Alvarado is technically their closer right now. Not only is he left-handed, but he's been super erratic, historically speaking. So Hoffman could work. I know everybody likes Kirkering, the young prospect for the Phillies, but Hoffman was really good, and I think he could work into a save share with Alvarado, and then if Alvarado, you know, slips up, I think Hoffman's one of the names that will be a name to watch to take over that closer role. And then Foley, you mentioned all the things you said about Foley. I like about Foley. So I already talked about why I like multi-inning, these non-closers, multi-innings for ratios, steal some wins. Every now and then you want to spec on saves. I don't think you need to only roster them. Why don't you just tell the people what you think the value is of these type of arms?
Here's the quirky thing about this type of player, which, again, I will always say these relievers are valuable. Try to target. Now, with the non-closing relievers, a lot of times I'm going to be more focused on a winning team where with a closer, if the team wins 75 or 80 or 82 games, it's kind of all comes out in the wash. I love my non-closers to come from winning teams because then they're going to luck into a handful of wins maybe and maybe the occasional save. But what I want people to focus on, and this is, of course, league-dependent to some degree. Everything we tell you is league-dependent to some degree. But I want you to look at your waiver wire 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks into the season. And look, go to the reliever tab and do a search by walks and strikeouts. And you're going to see a bunch of guys you know little about or nothing about who have 2 walks and 14 strikeouts. And I want you to pick up a couple of those guys or at least look into them. Go to their Fangraphs page or go to their Baseball Savant page or check them out in the baseball package. See what you think of them. Because as you talked about different relievers, they're failed starters. They couldn't develop the third pitch. New organization, new release point, new pitching coach, new catcher, whatever it is, new diet. Relievers are always getting, they're getting watered and fed and groomed and tweaked, and these guys come out of nowhere. And it's every year, I think of like the career path of Nick Anderson, where he had came up, kind of lost his way. People forgot about him. I think he was out of baseball for a while. He comes back. He's great. He's wipeout as a non-closer. He becomes a closer. Pitches in a very high-profile World Series game where they took Blake Snell out. At that point, he was on fumes. He had pitched almost every game in the playoffs, it felt like. And now he's hurt again. He's off the radar. There's going to be a – and I don't mean to trivialize any of that. I mean, the guy made the show, and he was a star for a couple of years. That's fantastic. But there are going to be other Nick Andersons. There are going to be next year when we do this program in that top 20, right. There may be like five or six guys we didn't even talk about. Because there's such teams are constantly looking. You know, if a closer goes bad, they'll make quick changes. If a starting pitcher couldn't make it, throw him in the bullpen and see how it works. If some guy gets off to, it doesn't take that many good appearances for a pitcher to get more valuable in his team's pecking order. So again, just mm-hmm. do the simple P&L rule, and you can draw the line wherever you want. But once these guys start having double digit strikeouts, just look at the relievers who have those double digit strikeouts who aren't walking guys, and then. Yeah. Dig deeper or make a pickup, and you're going to get them for zero fab dollars. You're going to get them for a first come first serve pickup. Okay. Cause they're not closing yet. Most of your opponents are going to be like, who's getting the saves. And they're going to miss this guy who's got 11 strikeouts and one walk. And maybe he'll get the saves a month from now or something like that. Or maybe he'll get seven wins and a 1.82 ERA and a 0.93 whip. I guarantee you these guys will come out of the woodwork every year. I want you to pick up a few of them, and they won't cost you much.
I think that's really smart and a good way to think about using those last relief pitcher spots, rather than say like, oh, I'm going to roster, you know, three of the guys on Oakland because somebody's going to come out as the closer. But if they're not good pitchers, yeah, they may steal you some saves, but they're not going to help you other places. And these guys, as you pointed out, you know, their new names emerge all the time. Some of the names I'm looking for, which I'll leave you all with, Yuki Matsui, who just signed with the Padres from Japan. He's looked really good in the spring. If Jeff Hoffman doesn't enter the Phillies' potential closer committee at the end, Sir Anthony Dominguez is back and looking good. I know people like David Robertson in Texas, but Josh Spores has looked really good and is somebody who could emerge if Jose Leclerc falters, like Jose Leclerc is wanting to do. The Royals traded a really good pitching prospect in David Sandlin to the Red Sox for John Schreiber, who was an effective reliever for the Red Sox. The Royals right now are running out lefty Will Smith as their closer. It would not be a surprise if Schreiber enters the late inning conversation for a Royals team that's actually pretty solid. You could go with Orion Kerkering for the Phillies. We talked about him as a young prospect with some upside. Also, Jordan Leisure is turning some heads for the White Sox. I don't think that they're going to start him as the closer because the White Sox, as a team that aren't contending, would really benefit from somebody like Brebbia or a veteran starting off the year in the end of games and looking good and then being moved. And then you see somebody like Leisure come into the role at the end. But this is the type of thing where you could get a young, intriguing pitcher who isn't a closer at the beginning of the year, but is maybe good and gives you just good ratios and numbers, and then will steal you saves at the end. Also, lastly, Emmanuel Clase has been in some trade rumors over the year. I don't know how legitimate they are, but Scott Barlow could take over that role if Clase is moved, and Barlow has been a good reliever in his own right. He could just be a good eighth inning guy for the Guardians and then maybe close games at the end of the year. So I like him as one of those kind of final options as well.
I'll give you just two stay away situations. Even though Mason Miller, I totally get the case for him. I'm just afraid Oakland's going to win like 51 games. Now you can get good fantasy closers from losing teams, but when the team is absolutely decrepit, I think you maybe have to steer away from it. And I know Colorado's had some closers of fantasy value here and there, and you know, Daniel Bard pitched so well a few years ago, he got a big contract, but it's overly simplistic, but no Colorado pitchers, and that includes their close. I know somebody may emerge and get a couple of saves, like, oh, I need the saves. Well, I'll just live with the ratios, and then he allows six runs, and you're like, you hate yourself. So no Colorado pitchers for me, and I'm not going to chase my tail with the Oakland closer situation.
Nice. I fully agree. Scott, it has been a pleasure running through all these positions with you. We are going to dive into just kind of like regular spring content as we get to the start of MLB season. Our next episode will be a recording, a live recording of our Roto-World staff mock draft, or friends and family mock draft, however you want to refer to it. We're doing that tomorrow. We'll be recording that with guests, breaking down all the picks. So that will go live, and then we'll be looking at some MLB best bets for those people wanting betting content. We'll look at spring training risers. We'll get you all the most up-to-date information you need for your drafts. As always, you can follow Scott and I online. You can follow me on Twitter at SamskyNYC, and Scott is at Scott_Pianowski. So continue to check back with us on the Roto-World Baseball Show in the final weeks before opening day. We'll see you next time for the Roto-World staff mock draft.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.